Good evening, everybody, and welcome to discussion here at CFRO 100.5 FM, and Happy New Year to everybody. Thanks for listening in to our replays from an earlier time for over the two holiday Wednesdays just passed. Today, we're going to do three major interviews and pieces. One is we're going to deal with the 211th anniversary of the Haitian Revolution. Now, listeners who followed us during the 2004 crisis when the Canadian government conspired with the United States and France and who else was involved in that? I think those are the three main actors who militarily intervened and organized a regime change by overthrowing the elected president Aristide of Haiti, having organized their forces to create preconditions for that military dictatorial event. Since then, the Haitian people have, since that February 29th, 2004, forced regime change and the imposition of the United Nations Armed Forces into Haiti, the ongoing struggle of the Haitian people for their freedom, of course, has never stopped, and nor will it ever stop until the people have their complete freedom and dignity and independence. The Haitian Revolution, of course, on that historic date, the military political leader Jean-Jacques Dessalines proclaimed independence on January 1st, 1804. And tonight, we are very honored to have a guest who we actually spoke to, I believe, back in those days when the coup was being organized, Ezili Danto, an artist of the stage and of a singer and a dancer and a political activist. And recently, she has written an article, Impeach Martelly, a Solution for Civil Society in Haiti. And we're very honored to have her on the radio tonight with us. Good evening, Ezili, and welcome to discussion here at CFRO. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're honored. Ezili, can you do me a favor, do us a favor, just, if you could, update us on the most recent developments in Haiti and why you have reached this conclusion that the impeachment of Martelly through the Senate of Haiti is a necessary, important political act that can open a path for the Haitian people out of the impasse that has been imposed on them.
I'm Ezili Danto, and I head the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network. This is our 20th year. Our work is to institutionalize the rule of law in Haiti. I was born in Haiti. Right now, we have had a U.S. occupation in Haiti since 2004, a direct U.S. occupation outsourced to the U.N. as peacekeepers in a country where there's less violence than there is in our other, like the Dominican Republic, which is the other side of the island, in a country that has no war. So the United States is in Haiti at the moment behind U.N. guns and NGO false benevolence. What's happening at the moment, we're at this conjuncture where in January 12, 2015, the Parliament of Haiti will dissolve. The reason that will happen is because Michel Martelly, the U.S. Sort of put in power puppet president, he was put into power in 2010 in an election right after the earthquake. There's a big earthquake that happened in Haiti, I'm sure your audience knows, on January 12, 2010. And right after that earthquake, people, 316,000 Haitians were killed in less than a minute. Greatest catastrophe that the world has known in terms of numbers of people dead in that amount of time. But it was at that time that this U.S. doctrine of shock doctrine forced the Haitians to go into elections, and the person that became president was a compas singer named Michel Martelly, who is a who was part of, let's say, the Juvenilist cabal back in 91. And back in terms of, you know, he was someone who worked with the army, someone who was right-wing, probably someone that in normal times would not have been elected by Haitians. And literally, there was less than 17% of the population voting. And within that 17% of the population that was voting, a lot of the ballots were blanks. There were people that were dead earthquake victims. But Hillary Clinton, who was at that point in time the Secretary of State under Barack Obama, flew down to Haiti and basically said to the parliament, either you ratify this or you know, you lose your visas. And this has been going on since 2011. So now we're in 2015. Since Martelly has come into power, he's basically acted as a dictator with the UN as his guns, taking the place of the old Haitian bloody army, and has never held elections for parliament. When he got into power in May of 2011, there were normally the parliament is made up of 30 senators and 99 deputies in the lower house. There was only 20 senators at that time when he got into power back in 2011, May of 2011. And his first constitutional thing should have been to hold elections for the other third and for local offices and so forth. But since Michel Martelly has gotten into power in Haiti, there has not been any elections. So the reasons why we wrote the piece that said that what has to happen is to impeachment is that for the last 3 years, people have been on the streets protesting against Martelly in various ways. He's held 4 carnivals, but no elections. And he spent money on carnivals. He spent money on flying to various hotel places and promoting a lot of what the United States put him in office to do, which is neoliberal economy, where you privatize the public assets and where you do an export economy, and where you know, development is like tourism, where you take fishermen. Lands and give it to the wealthy tourister. So that's what he called development. And so we have that debacle. We have the debacle of the Clintons with regards to the interim Haiti Recovery Commission that came to be in 2010 that was supposed to be about collecting donor monies to help the earthquake victims. They have collected $10 billion, and now everyone's asking, where did the money go? So we're at a point right now where there's going to be a dissolution of Parliament on January 12, 2015, because there has not been an election. There have been 2 lawyers in Haiti and others who have brought many corruption charges against the Martelly family. There's a judge that died under suspicious circumstances. There were, until very last week, many political prisoners, so people were asking for those things to happen. What has happened in the last, let's say, month or so, is that Martelly's prime minister, which was Laurent Lamothe, has resigned due to the constant demonstrations asking for the government to resign itself, and for the people, a lot of demonstrators who were on the streets, the Martelly government, along with the U.S. trained, Canadian, French trained, Haitian police. Would be doing what they were doing, let's say, in Ferguson, Missouri. You know, they have militarized police that they have trained, Haitian police, and they would be, you know, throwing foul water, foul tear gas and so forth at students and those people who were protesting the fact that this new so-called, you know, Duvalierist-type dictatorship in Haiti that is implanted there by the international community. And the OAS and those that are doing this delegitimizing of elections to have a front that we have a democracy. The people have been protesting. So as of right now, we have a situation where the Prime Minister of Haiti has resigned due to the pressure of the streets. Today, the Supreme Court Justice has resigned and because of the stuff. And Martelly is faced right now with there's only 20 senators. They're the only functioning, at this moment, operating parliamentary branch, because the deputies, the 92 that are left, they're out of session, and when they come back in session, all their terms will be over. So there will not be any parliament. So the parliament's about to be dissolved. So what we said at the Haitian Lawyers Leadership is, in order to avoid bloodshed and further unconstitutionality, the best thing for the Senate, which is the only legal authority that's left, I mean, to the extent you could call it legal because we are under occupation, and all elections, we believe, are delegitimized, but to the extent that these are the only legal space and place where Haitians could say, based on the Haitian Constitution, the people have taken a referendum, this illegal person, we want him out, we want the corruption gone. We thought that in order to avoid the bloodshed, that the best thing to do is for those 20 senators to come together and impeach Martelly. They have actually 2 years ago put out a resolution to impeach him, but since it was supposed to come out from the deputies, and the deputies were pretty much bought off, now that the deputies are not there, we thought that the best way to solve the problem is that. But I think the situation has gone way past that at the moment. We wrote this, 2 weeks ago. The situation is moving very, very fast. At the moment, we are told there are U.S. Marines that landed in Haiti yesterday. We don't know if they're there to keep Martelly in power or if they're there to take him out on a plane to go the way that Duvalier went back in 1986.
Wow, that's a lot of information to take in. And what you're describing clearly is a evolving political crisis, and the possibilities of some headway being made by the popular forces. Can you talk to us a little bit about the role at this time, or even the existence at this time, of the Famille Lavalas, the party that Aristide led, and what role it might be playing, or whether they still have organization on the ground? In other words, what are the popular forces' political leadership look like on the ground to you in the United States at this time?
Yes. Famille Lavalas is the party that President Aristide, who your audience might want to know that at one point back in 1995, I was one of his lawyers before he came back during the first coup d'etat. In 1991, he was the first democratically elected president. That is his political party. But since 2004, when he was taken on a plane by U.S. Special Forces and deported back to Africa, the Famille Lavalas political party has not been allowed to go to elections. And as of today, this is President Aristide, who returned to Haiti 7 years after the coup d'etat of 2004. So he came back, I think, 2011 or so. And at that time, so now we have a situation, that's one of the reasons why we have not had elections, because the popular, Haiti is a very politicized people. They are really, really, they're not like Americans in terms of, Haitians, are very, very participatory about what's going on in their country. So right now, the reason we have this sort of convergence of things happening, this sort of like pushing Martelly and Lamothe to resign, and to the point where the resignation is close, is because of the popular movement. And that popular movement includes what is generally known as the Lavalas movement, which is not, let's say, the political party of, which is larger than the political party of President Aristide. It is the entire pro-democracy folks in Haiti who want to, who may come from different points of view, but who are about not having dictatorship and about institutionalized the rule of law. Within that label, we do have Famille Lavalas, which is headed by President Aristide, is still sort of nominally there's a woman, her name is Marie Nassis, she's the head of that at the moment. And then you have the people who are actually the senators who've been the opposition, the vocal opposition to Martelly. And right now it is those senators. It is, for instance, Senator Moïse, Jean-Charles Moïse, who is innately a Lavalassian. He was mayor of Milo back in the day in 91. He was someone who the Cedras government, he had to go in hiding. He is now, so he's gone through the ranks. He's not like Fermi Lavalas' political party, but he's part of the Lavalas movement. He is one of the most vocal folks who are leading the people on the streets right now, excuse me, to, I guess, to talk about a couple of things. What they're asking for is the resignation of the puppet government of Haiti, for the minister is the UN peacekeeping force in Haiti, and I put peacekeeping in quotation marks. They're asking for them to leave. They're the military arm of the U.S. occupation. They're asking for the NGOs to leave. There are more NGOs that non-governmental charitable, and it's the charitable industrial complex, what we at the Haitian Lawyers Leadership call these white saviors who come in and basically make a lot of money off of masturbating on black pain, but it is projected as if it's about Haitian reconstruction or Haitian, and they've been in Haiti for decades. We're still at zero growth, zero infrastructure for public health and so forth and so on, because they do not have any accountability to the public, only to their various memberships, and those memberships are located in overseas. And it is the new way that post-Cold War that the United States controls the internal affairs of people of different countries is by destroying the infrastructure and then making this country dependent by bringing in charity as a new infrastructure. And that charity is discriminatory because it's, who that charity supports will be people who are more white-wing, more about supporting U.S. imperialism. So normally the distribution will go to more those types of people than it will go to the majority who are really, really in need. And folks don't quite understand that the NGOs are very politicized because they're funded by governments who are funding them for a particular reason. So that's what's going on in Haiti. The Fermi Lavalas movement is very, very powerful. One of the most powerful movement. One of them is the most powerful political party if they were allowed to go to elections today. It's more than likely, unless they put on someone ridiculous, that they will win because of the struggle that the Haitian people have had with regards to President Aristide. But there are very new and dynamic young lawyers and people who have distinguished themselves in the last 10 years outside of the Fermi Lavalas party, because the Fermi Lavalas party was forbidden to go to election. And those people are Senator Jean-Charles Moïse from the North. He is now leading the charge on the streets right now. He's saying, he's not going to go back to the Senate. He's pushing for Matéli to leave, for the NGOs to leave, for ministers to leave. We at the Haitian Lawyers Leadership see and have explained to folks in the world that minister, the UN Chapter 7 peace enforcement force that's in Haiti and has been in Haiti for 7 years and has left us with no development and lots of human rights abuses, including they brought to us cholera in October 2010, which has killed over 10,000 poor Haitians and has infected all of our waterways and has infected over 850,000 Haitians. So that's what the UN humanitarians have brought us. And this is after the earthquake and the amazing trauma of that. We are at a conjuncture right now, a convergence, where on January 12, 2015, it will mark the fifth year anniversary of the earthquake. It will also mark the dissolution of the parliament. And it marks, so because of all of that, there seems to be within Washington, because of the global situation, China and Russia may not vote for the UN troops to be in Haiti because of their difficulties at the moment. So we see finally an opportunity maybe to push to get rid of minister, to try to get our sovereignty back, and everybody's pushing towards that right now. And we don't know exactly what role Fermi Lavalas will play, But we do know the role, for instance, of people who've like been fighting when Fonavalas was, you know, forced not to be as an organization, not to be not to go to election. So you still have many people that are part of Fonavalas, but you also have a lot of what we call Estavex collaborators, people who and we can't judge them because, you know, it is what it is, but people who ended up, like many Americans, you know, working for the dollar, working for the other side. And that's happened a lot with Fonavalas folks. They were very pressured. In 2004, I represented I represented, for instance, Prime Minister Yvon Yipchirn, who was the Prime Minister under President Aristide. He was put in jail when they threw President Aristide to Africa. He was put in jail, and for 2 years, you know, we worked to get him out. So there was tons and tons and tons of Fonavalas and Lavalas folks who have suffered tremendously, and there has been a cost to that.
Well, Azili, what I hear you saying, though, and it's very optimistic, is that whilst that older generation of fighters took their bruises and went through the struggle, and some, you know, came through it with flying colors, and others, you know, didn't do so well. But whatever, in the meantime, from what I hear you saying, a whole new generation of patriotic forces, forces that demand democracy, demand genuine Haitian independence, have arisen. And I also hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, that January 12th looks like a very important date whereby this convergence of oppositional forces in the country, plus the end of the old, what remains of the old parliamentary legitimacy of government, come to an end, and plus the contradictions within the United Nations that you spelled out that may lead to China or Russia vetoing a renewal of the minister, as you point out, it's a puppet police force, and we've known that since day one. But it looks like that date seems to be a possibility. And this is my question to you: do you feel there is that maturity of forces there that could, if circumstances develop well, for this youngish senator who's leading the masses on the streets, and I'm looking at a picture of them on a paper here that I have, hundreds and thousands of people in not only in Port-au-Prince but also in other cities in Haiti, that they could make a breakthrough here, that they could put together some kind of popular empowerment of the broad masses of the Haitian nation to perhaps come up with a patriotic front of some kind or patriotic government of some kind that could lead to new elections and the establishment of an independent Haiti?
I think so. You know, I'm excited about it, and I'll give you the reasons why. Of course, you know, it's always ominous when U.S. forces land in Haiti, and we are at this juncture. But so many people have already died in the last, 10 years, fighting to just maintain our to get to this point, to tell you the truth. But I'll give you an example. There are two young lawyers, André Michel and Newton Saint-Just, and this is interesting because they are asking Bill Clinton to account for the $10 billion that was collected from 2010 to 2022. For 18 months, he was the co-chair of the Interim Haiti Recovery Commission. And that's very exciting because for the first time, we're looking outwards. It's not like this internal fight. It's like, here are our traditional enemies. Here is what they're doing. I mean, it's clearer now. Whereas before, you know, we didn't really have that. So I think that's very interesting that you have this conjuncture, this sort of convergence happening. We have, for instance, right now, January 12th is coming. Lots of media, they only come to Haiti once a year, really, when the earthquake anniversary comes along, to do these little feel-good stories. But one of the big stories is what happened to the money, and that $10 billion. So here we are, with this lawsuit that's at this point where there is a lawsuit with regards to the cholera, but this lawsuit is with these two young Haitian lawyers who have been able to get many Haitians out of jail in the last 3 weeks because of the uprising of the people, because people were going to the streets. And the U.S. occupational forces, led by this Matéli government, would arrest them and throw them in prison. Just recently, you know, one of the people, for instance, Matéli has been ruling by decree since he got in. The international community ignored it. The international community emboldened it. But today, the forces of all this media coming in, the United States can't control all the media. Of course, they control the corporate media, but you have all media coming from all over the world coming to talk about what happened. You know, this is the fifth anniversary, what has been done, how many people are still on the streets, how many, you know, housing has been, you know, where has the money gone, what's going on with jobs and so forth. So we have that conjuncture. So we have that. We have the UN Security Council coming to Haiti supposedly on January 23rd to try to make as if the project is a you know, they're trying. They say they want Haiti to go through elections. So you have all this happening, but at the same time, you have these young Haitians who are in the streets almost every day. They're calling it Operation Burkina Faso. Because I think your audience knows that Burkina Faso just took down their right-wing government and was able to hang on. You know, Haiti wants to do the same thing. They want to take down this imperial government and try to hang on and put in not, you know, the same old switching the seats, but new people who are about the local needs of Haitians. And so I see that. I think it's a critical movement. They're about the local needs of Haitians for health care, for food. Our food sovereignty was destroyed by the Clinton administration, and he's apologized for it. But then, you know, we have Monsanto from the U.S. We have all kinds of unfair trade still going on. I see that this group of Haitians are much more knowledgeable about what export economy is about, how it destroys the local economy. They're much more cognizant that the NGOs collect, you know, 99 cents of every dollar they collect goes back to them. Only 1 cent goes to Haitian government. They understand all of that. They don't want that kind of aid. They don't want them there. And I think that's a new thing, and I hope that it continues. I hope that the United States, you know, doesn't, you know, brutally silence these people with death. I think that the world situation is such that with all the eyes and people like you who are calling me, for instance, I mean, I've been here for 20 years, but normally they'll call, you know, the fluffy technocrats or whatever who's going to tell them some lies about how everything is hunky-dory. So I think I see a change, and we hope not too many more people die. We hope that it's not a bloodbath coming up in the next 3 weeks.
Okay, I... Sorry, I just need to talk to you a little bit more, if you've got the time for me. Now, one of the things you mentioned is the international situation and the recent development of Obama recognizing or saying he's going to recognize the Cuban government and the freedom of the Cuban Five, the last three of the Cuban Five landing in Cuba in time for their New Year's anniversary of their revolution, because their revolution also on January 1st, of course, like yours. And I'm just wondering whether the a balance of forces in your immediate neighborhood, in the Caribbean countries, in South America, is up to supporting a withdrawal of Minister. I know that, for example, friends of mine in Brazil were not really very cognizant of the role Brazil had played. I think quite a retrogressive role in taking on the job of the U.S., as you point out, and other countries, of course, going in there. Canada, of course, a big player on the side of the U.S. empire, and under our present prime minister, as you probably well know, is more or less an annexationist in the sense that he's annexing Canada to the United States and so on. So these political configurations are there. So specifically, let me just ask you this, Zili, is there a broad support for the movement, I would say, for independence and for this renewal of democracy in Haiti amongst your neighboring countries? And will you get support from people like Venezuela, obviously from Cuba and others? Did you feel that strength there?
No. We have fought this fight alone, and actually in direct with the blockage of people who are supposedly socialists and progressives. You know, back in 2004, it was Lula. Today, it's Michelle Bachelet. All of these supposedly progressive Latin American countries, racism comes first, socialism comes second, and Haiti is the country without a European father. We have no European father to block any of the power-hungry countries that might want to use Haiti in any ways that they can. So to answer your question, I have a piece out that's called The Quiet Genocide in Haiti, from FDR to Obama, and the UN, a criminal organization, from Lumumba to Aristide. And in that piece, I speak directly about some of the heinous things that Brazil, Venezuela, and Cuba have allowed happen to Haiti with absolutely not a blink of their eye. The progressives that we've reached out to have basically left us alone. Haiti is the space right now with regards to MINISTA. As I say, MINISTA, which is the UN troops that are in Haiti, it's about, let's say, 10,000 UN troops in Haiti coming from 22 countries. Out of those 22 countries, 11 of them are Latin American countries. They are making hundreds of millions of dollars on our pain and suffering. They have left nothing for us except a lot of pain and suffering in 10 years. Now, Venezuela is not part of the military or police contingent, neither is Cuba. However, you have Evo Morales, who has troops with MINISTA, and this guy is supposed to be a revolutionary. We don't understand that. You have Brazil. You have, like I said, 11 Latin American countries. What we are to them is a job for their poor soldiers who would not be able to make $800 to $1,000 a month in the military in their own home, but they can make that in Haiti, and they can live a very, very nice life behind these various walls that they are living in. And the United States provides them with training, how to shoot people in the head, and that kind of thing on Haitian soil. Like I said, our violence rate is less than Dominican Republic has 4 times more violence than Haiti. Brazil has 54 times more violence than Haiti, and Brazil is bringing us stability. They're the head of the. They make 20. I think right now the amount for the budget for the UN minister troops is something like, let's say, between $700 to $800 million a year. During the earthquake 4 years ago, it was clear to the billions. I know that as the so-called Brazils are the general commandering of the minister mission. They make 20% of that budget in their coffers, straight up, and in addition to whatever money they're making each with regard to how many thousand of soldiers that they have in Haiti. So it's a money-making proposition. Nobody's going to die. And they live behind these walls. They learn various stuff. They stay on the internet most of the time. And the rape of Haitian women have risen. The all kinds of awful things have been happening to us in terms of our human rights because MINISTA is in Haiti, and none of these Latin American countries are really doing anything to go to their various nations and say, you know, we don't want to be the outsourced military that's colonizing poor Haiti. You know, over the last 11 years, I've seen some movements in Brazil. I've seen some various movements in other places. But Uruguay, for instance, 2 years ago, there was a scandal where four of their troops sodomized an 18-year-old man that they just took from the streets and brought to their bunkers. We've had lots of sexual sort of the sort of thing that you hear all over with regards to what, you know, a male military who has nothing to do with their time, there's really no war in Haiti, does with their time. We've had tons of brothels. 110 Sri Lankan soldiers were deported for creating a brothel in Haiti and using the women and children and so on and so forth. The bottom line is, I have not seen any solidarity with the so-called socialist progressive nations in Latin America, and I think racism is the reason for it. I also think self-interest is the reason for it because of the money they're making in Haiti, and it's easy money. And the mass media has been ineffective with telling what's going on in Haiti and why the UN is there. I think everyone thinks that, you know, we're black, therefore we're cannibals, we're eating each other, and we need the UN there to make to keep us from being brutal, violent, and black, whatever. So they're there. They use racism, and and as I was saying, Cuba. Our problem with Cuba is that they have wonderful medical troops there, medical brigade, and they've always had, and it's been effective. But there comes a point when it becomes in competition with Haitian medical people. And so when you have that permanent brigade, it just takes over what we're looking for, which is, you know, there are lots of Haitian doctors who can't find jobs because they have to compete with these people who are in Haiti.
Okay, Azili? Unfortunately, our time is up. I thank you for speaking so straightforwardly about the situation in Latin America. There's no question in my mind. When I was in Brazil, I spoke to people in Brazil. They really had no sense of the crimes that were being committed by Minister. I had a very clear sense, but we had correspondence. Anthony Fenton was in Haiti. He was a regular correspondent of ours, wrote on it. We've had a number of progressive Canadian journalists here who've taken quite strong stands. I haven't heard much recently in the progressive media here except one of the articles that led me to your article, as a matter of fact, in the TML. The information you give me is very important. I said to my students today, speaking about what you just raised about the racism issue, I said to my students, you know, when our human species, one of the last, I guess, of the bipedals, walked out of Africa, our motherland, it's pretty clear how much we love our mother by the way the world treats Africa and Africans. And, so this is an ongoing historical issue to be resolved in the course of a lot of struggles. And the Haitian people are to be admired by the entire world's population. This is an enslaved population that broke the chains of chattel slavery. And in the first time in world history, chattel slaves were victorious over three European armies. Count them. English, Spanish, and French armies defeated all of them in the battlefield and built an independent country, and then were enthralled again by the chains of debt imposed by France. And, of course, the Haitian revolt really shook the old world right to its core, because the slaveocracy in Virginia and Washington, the slaveocracy in Liverpool and London, in Paris, they never really recovered from the heroic revolt of the Haitian people. So thank you, Azili, for spending time with us and for your candid remarks. And we look forward to following events on the 12th. And if things do unfold, can we talk to you again?
Yes. And thank you so much. Thanks for your audience. And please go to our website if you want to hear, you know, get any update. It's ezilidanto.com.
Okay. Spell it out for us one more time.
It's EZILIDANTO.com. And that's the website, and you can find us on Facebook and every place. But, we are covering this issue. We've been doing this for a long time. And folks who want to know the truth about Haiti, the non-colonial narrative, just go to EZILIDANTO.com.
Thanks so much, Ezili, and lots of success in the work ahead, and we'll be following these events very closely. And as I say, if they mature into some really serious developments there, that look, we will get back to you and we'll put you on air again. How's that?
I so much appreciate it. You're one in a million. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So that was Ezili Danto, a very outspoken, as you heard, woman activist. She's an artist as well. Okay, don't know what that's all about. I wonder if my guest is still on the line. Is my guest still on the line? Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.